We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
11!
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
It's not 10. You see, you're on 10 here. Where can you go from there? Where?
To 11.
11, exactly.
11.
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Wow, we've already covered a lot of stuff so far. We talked basketball. Ja Morant was really the story yesterday. That was kind of all you needed to know what was happening. It was whatever he was doing. That's what we were paying attention to. Really,
the undercard was Fletcher McGee, and that was very fun to watch Wofford win.
Yeah,
a couple of dollars down on that,
it wasn't Ja.
It just wasn't.
And Tom Izzo, the issues he had with his player and how he spun it afterwards, and you know, it's who he is, what he does. If you don't like it, you're a wuss. Okay, whatever. Talk to Shannon Ryan about that and more, and who stole her potato chips, we'll never know. We also talked baseball with Jonah Carey, and you brought up this idea of all of a sudden yesterday, while we were watching basketball, there were a bunch of contract extensions signed from veteran players right around that little frightened area where they thought they might not necessarily get market value.
So we begin in Florida.
Wait, we're going to give our baseball guess, right?
But we're going to do that now.
You said before.
I thought I might have said after, but I said before. You're right. We have baseball guests. That's typical for me. All season long on Tuesday at 10 a.m.
I'm going to save Tuesday.
We have replaced Jeff Sullivan.
Yeah, we have replaced Jeff Sullivan. Jonah Carey, Fridays at 11.
Yes.
Okay. Len Casper, Thursdays at 11.
Wonderful.
And then you ask who, now that Jeff Sullivan is a member of the Tampa Bay Rays, who is going to be the weekly Bernstein and McKnight baseball guest. Tuesdays at 10, Joe Sheehan.
That's awesome. Now he can read his columns.
One of the smartest people of the game, right? Instead of me reading what he writes,
he can just do it.
We can actually say, say it.
Joe, what do you think?
Yes.
Here's a column.
He's a part of our show now.
Those are some big-time baseball minds, and I am thrilled to have all three of them on the show all week long. It'll be awesome. South Florida has a plague going on, and it's not people, it's actually poisonous cane toads.
Oh, but they're good. You lick them and you hallucinate, right?
No, these are the ones that kill you. Heavy rains in Florida are bringing much more than the need for an umbrella. The inclement weather has also sparked a massive influx of cane toads, critters with a poison so toxic pet owners are feeling for their animals' safety. Mark Holliday, a lead technician with the South Florida Toad Removal Service, Toad Busters.
No, it's not.
Yeah, you want that sentence again? That was fun for me to read.
Okay.
Mark Holliday, a lead technician with the South Florida Toad Removal Service, Toad Busters.
There it is, sure.
Told WPTV that the toads certainly pose a risk to pets and children, too. Cane toads were first introduced to Florida in 1936 as a means of controlling sugar cane pests. So this is a scenario where you the spider goes in, and then you send the something to kill the spider, and then the something to kill the something, and then the dog to kill the cat, and now you've got a whole bunch of things running around willy-nilly. Mass hysteria is what you've got going on. The poison can kill people, children included. And these guys are picking up like 200 to 300 toads in a night, just like that, I assume with, you know, protective gloves and everything. They have no hope. They have no hope of picking up all of the toads, all of the poisonous cane toads out of Florida. They're there to stay, despite the hard efforts of those at Toad Busters.
So if you are a licker of toads for recreational drug use, just know your toads?
It's not these toads. Yeah, make sure you get toads from a reputable toad dealer.
Let's stay in Florida, in Panama City. A Florida man has been convicted of second-degree murder in the stabbing death of his co-worker in what began as a dispute over gumbo seasoning.
Huh?
Orlando Ricardo Thompson, 27, was found guilty Thursday in the 2015 death of Caleb Halley, not Caleb Haney, who's alive and well, as far as we know. Caleb Halley, according to the Panama City News Herald, he faces up to life in prison. He'll be sentenced May 4th. On June 23rd of 2015, Thompson and Halley began arguing about how many spices to add to the gumbo they were making at Buddy's Seafood Market. The argument quickly escalated into a physical altercation involving a 2x4 and a pocket knife.
Those weren't the seasonings, right?
The pair separated, but Thompson is accused of starting up the fight again, this time with a decorative sword. Halley tried to defend himself with a mop handle, but suffered stab wounds to the abdomen. Halley died 2 days later. Surveillance video captured the incident and was used by the prosecution to argue their case. Now here, if this wasn't already Florida enough, ready for the kicker?
Uh-huh.
Halley was known in the community for serving as Chief Osceola, the Florida State University mascot, from 2004 to 2007.
Oh, no.
You killed Chief Osceola.
Also, why does one have a decorative sword at a gumbo cook-off?
And good luck with... No, it's not a cook-off. They work there.
Either way, why does one have a decorative sword?
Never know. Huh. When you're going to need it to defend against a mop handle.
Or to decorate. Need a ruling on this. Would love to involve the fats as the I'm Fat March Fatness Tournament voting is underway as well. Lucky Charms is throwing out a specialty item.
Yep.
General...
Oh, you weren't done? I'm sorry.
15,000 lucky winners will get a box of Lucky Charms that consists entirely of the marshmallows.
Oh, my God. That's every bowl of Lucky Charms I've ever had.
It kind of feels that way.
This is like Oops Just Berries, the Crunch Berries thing.
Yep. You can, I guess it's a box top kind of scenario where you're supposed to buy Lucky Charms and you rip off the box tops, enter them into the computer at marshmallowonly.com, and you'll be informed whether you've won the sweet, sweet prize. If these sugar fiends don't win between now and September 17th, it's back to meticulously picking out all the colorful mellows from boring old oat cereal bits. That's what I've been doing with Lucky Charms forever. That's how you eat Lucky Charms.
Yeah, you eat the crappy pieces first, then you're left with a bowl of marshmallows.
Oh no, well that's amazing. The Catholic way to do it.
You
eat your penance first, and then you eat the marshmallows. Apparently, guilt-free people can just eat the marshmallows and throw the rest away.
Truth be told, if you took out the marshmallows, how well do you know your sugared cereals? If you took out the marshmallows, you would have the equivalent of what Post cereal?
I believe that would be Alpha Bits.
Nicely done, Connor McKnight. And I liked Alpha Bits. The Jackson 5 always put it Alpha Bits.
Yeah, they're fine.
So I need to have a ratio. I like to have some Alpha Bits and some marshmallows.
Ratio is key in food. I don't blame you at all for that. An entire box of marshmallows would take you how long to put away? That's the question.
Now, do you also remember the cereal Kaboom?
I do not remember the cereal Kaboom.
Kaboom!
No.
That was my first memory of a cereal with the marshmallow bits in it. And it had a little sort of freaky clown on the front.
Of course
and
it did.
That,
oh, yeah,
I don't
okay.
know if you remember. It might have been gone by the time you were eating sugared cereals as a youngin', but I remember having Lucky Charms, but I was always kind of chasing that the Kaboom experience.
Kaboom remained available for sale until 2010.
What?
You could have been eating it up to 9 years ago.
Not around here, it didn't.
Oh, well.
I'll tell you that. Don't overthink this. Do not overthink this. What are the top drunk snacks? New survey of 2,000 Americans. The top snacks when inebriated.
These are household snacks, right? They're not like at a restaurant or bar or whatever. These are household snacks.
I would think either or. It looks to me more like restaurant bar.
French fries.
Third.
Pizza.
Number one, pizza. 66%.
Well, that's a drunk meal. Well, I guess depending on how
rescue pizza.
Yeah, rescue pizza. That's a good slice of rescue pizza.
French fries are third.
Wings.
No, actually. Not surprisingly wings. Enough.
Quesadilla or something?
On a technicality, chips and dip is second.
Oh, yeah. I won't take credit for that. Chips and dip, number two.
Pizza, number one. Chips and dip, number two. French fries, three. And
onion rings?
No. You sent a picture of this yesterday, 4th.
Oh, sorry about that. I didn't mean to take that photo.
Why?
Nachos? Oh, that photo. Yes. I thought you made a different photo.
No.
I got a little... John Morant got everybody very excited yesterday. I apologize.
Nachos are fourth, and their close cousin tacos are fifth. So pizza, chips
closed
and dip,
nachos,
French fries, nachos, tacos. As I said, don't overthink it.
So I'd like to offer a new entry into the Midday Midway, a subcategory, if you will.
Yes.
I'd like to call it Emails from Mitch. As you know, our beloved program director often sends emails of curious variety. He will put a lot in the subject line of the email, and oftentimes the actual subject of the email doesn't exist, or the subject line itself gets cut off. So, scrolling through the emails this morning, many of them, some with, you know, station stuff, some with fun stories from around the internet and whatever. And he's always really good about keeping everybody up to date. Like, these are good emails with content. You just have to find the content in them. So, I open up my email just as we're starting the show and saw the headline. It's just the headline with a link at the bottom, and I'll click the link. But in my email, it just says, Cam Newton, sex quarterback.
Fred Garvin, male prostitute.
That's all it says. Cam Newton, sex quarterback. And I thought, well, that's an interesting email to get from Mitch and a new position in the NFL, to be sure. Mm-hmm. So I opened the link from TMZ. And as it turns out, Cam was on the Late Late Show with James Corden. And in the process of explaining why he's going vegan, he let everybody know he is also done with sex. He said, I hope this is an adult crowd. It looks like it is. And proceeded to tell everyone that he's taking on a challenge every month. It started with no gambling in January, no meat in February. Now, in March, it is no sex or Wi-Fi. Those are his challenges for the month of March. Best of luck. He says it'll make his mind stronger. Because I feel like if I go back and say I did these things, I'm mentally stronger. Good on you, Cam. Best of luck to you. I think the Wi-Fi might be harder. Well, maybe just me.
That's an email. Even Ray said that's too far. Resident vegan said that is too far.
It's too much.
And we also know that whole old boxing credo about how it takes your leg strength or somebody else.
Well, that was like, high school football coaches told us that.
Yeah.
When I was in high school at a Catholic school, they were like, it'll take your legs. What do you think we're doing?
Well, here's a new one. A New York man is accused of keeping live sharks in an above-ground pool inside of his home for the purpose of selling them.
I feel like that's probably illegal.
So illegal. So I'm thinking, all right, maybe like nurse sharks and horn sharks or bamboo sharks or something. No. These are legit sharks. Joshua Seguin, 38, of LaGrangeville, was charged Tuesday with illegal commercialization of fish, shellfish, crustaceans, and wildlife, according to New York Attorney General Letitia James, accused of illegally possessing 7 sandbar sharks.
And those are...
big!
Biggins?
Real shark. Yes, they're a cousin of a bull shark. Those are the sandbar sharks, are the really sharky looking ones at the reef at the shed.
Looking very sharky.
The ones with the big shoulders on them. Those are sandbar sharks.
Look at them up. Oh yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Those are aggressive looking sharks.
Those look
like they'd take your leg.
Those are not lamniform sharks. Those would be the carcharonids or the ground sharks.
I don't know. I'm on Google Images.
A protected species under New York law. It was a full investigation started in July of 2017 when he was found in possession of 5 dead sharks in the back of his truck. 5 dead sharks. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. 5 dead sharks. Sorry.
Why? It's not even clever or funny or anything. It's just dumb.
Well, they searched his home. They found dead sandbar sharks and 2 dead leopard sharks. Also have the one-armed drummer.
One fin, yeah.
One dead hammerhead shark. Good luck keeping those in captivity. And the snout of a small-toothed sawfish that's an endangered species. Now, this is amazing. He was selling sharks on a website called monsterfishkeepers.com. The cost to legally acquire a sandbar shark is what? And I wouldn't even have a ballpark for this.
Like for him, for a collector, for a prospective seller?
Let's say you're an aquarium. What do you think it costs to buy, legally, a sandbar shark?
Like $10,000?
Anyone else?
I'll go $18,000.
$1, Drew.
Not bad, guys. $11,500.
Oh, we had it surrounded.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's
is that after, you know, taxes and registration?
I'm actually a doc fee. I'm kind of impressed.
Well, yeah, I just kind of threw a number out.
So the biologist accompanied officers there from the Long Island Aquarium, the Wildlife Conservation Society's New York Aquarium and Coney Island. Cool aquarium, by the way. The New York Aquarium and Coney Island. Yeah.
Never been.
Yeah. There was a walrus that was yelling at me.
Well, he was doing the right thing.
Yeah, he must have known.
He was doing the right thing.
The walrus was yelling at me. It happened.
It was also called Bob.
And he looked like one.
He looked like a Bob?
Yeah, they assessed the live sharks. They transferred them to the Long Island Aquarium before they were moved to the New York Aquarium. So the sharks are going to be fine, apparently.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Pleased to announce our lineup for baseball season. Tuesday at 10, we got Joe Sheehan. Thursday at 11, Len Casper. Friday at 11, Jonah Carey. We also have a new region opening for voting in the March Fatness bracket. Fellas, which one are we on now? It is the Rick Camp bracket?
No, we are still working the second round of the Russ Schneider region, which pits bacon against Peter Griffin, Oreos against buffets, Pizza Puff against Slip-On Shoes, and the drive-thru against cake.
Ooh, not the band, the food.
At noon, the Jay Zawoski region will open up in the second round.
You can vote, or you can head over to 670thescore.com/MarchFatness for the bracket and get your vote on Twitter, too. I'm Fat Pod, I believe, is the Twitter handle of the fellas.
312-644-6767. You want to jump in? We have food to taste, actually.
We do?
Yeah.
That's right. The White Sox have dropped off a whole bunch of food.
We have work to do.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
I did it again.
What? What'd you do?
I rubbed my eye after having a spicy taco. I am such a dope.
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
God, yeah.
I mean, you are supposed to enjoy the spicy tacos. Like, have yourself a day, but don't go to the eyes after
I had
that.
A day yesterday. I can't have another day. And the fact that this is the beginning tonight of our anniversary staycation. And I think she wanted to go to, like, Mercadito or something tonight. So
you're
going
to have to, yeah, you're going to have to fix yourself up after this. The fine folks at the White Sox were nice enough to bring over some new offerings at the ballpark, and we ate them in a matter of 3 to 4 minutes. And the antique tacos are fantastic. The Nashville hot, what is that? The Nashville hot chicken sandwich, right?
Yes.
With the pickles. That's the one with the pickles on it.
That, I don't eat a lot of things with pickles.
It's perfect.
I'm learning to like pickles more on certain things. I'm appreciating the pickle on the White Castle slider.
Oh. Yeah, the pickle on the chicken sandwich is something that when I was living in Myrtle Beach, you know, down in the set where that is just kind of standard issue stuff. You put that on a chicken sandwich, that's a thing now.
Yeah, now my...
You're hurting.
It's just my eye.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The heat on the tacos, ideal. Oh. It's really good.
But then you put it in your eyeball.
Yeah, they advise against that, I believe.
You just acted like a moron.
Yes, it's an antique tacos Airstream slow-smoked brisket, three different cheeses with a color of tres quesos, grilled onions, beware sauce, cilantro, and then they give you a little chunk of lime to squeeze over it.
Did you drizzle the lime?
I ate it too fast. No, of course.
I think I had the lime, and I was like, just eat the taco.
It needs it because they give you the good. It's not just all the leanest part of the brisket. There's... What I love about a well-distributed brisket is you get some of the globs of fat in there, and a little extra acidity helps counterbalance some of that stuff. So.
Some serious stuff from the Sox, as always. Speaking of Sox, there's another team making a little bit of news. Remember, we'd just been talking about the contract extensions being offered to some of baseball's best and some of baseball's youngest. This one is reportedly headed for Chris Sale. Ooh. This is from Alex Spire of the Globe. Chris Sale and the Red Sox are nearing an agreement on a contract that will keep the star left-hander in Boston for years to come, according to a major league source. This one's real interesting to me because Sale, I mean, remember the drama around Sale and his needing to get back into the rotation? And could he find the fastball after he had the shoulder thing that got wonky on him late in, I want to say, was that the beginning, late in August into September? He dealt with that for most of the last month of the season, if memory serves. And there was a lot of hand-wringing around the Red Sox as to whether or not he was going to be able to be effective or even make a roster. And then he just, you know, kind of Chris sailed his way through some relief outings and gutted his way through throwing a whole bunch of fastballs and that nasty slider. Chris Sale, it sounds like, according to Alex Spire of the Globe, is next up on what will likely be another, well, will definitely be another $100 million plus contract extension this offseason.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey. The first place Chicago Wolves return to Allstate Arena next Saturday as they look to clinch another playoff berth. Celebrate the 25th anniversary season with free parking courtesy of Kia. For information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Basketball is occurring. Cincinnati has run out to a quick 14-5 lead over Iowa, a game being played in front of no one.
Well, does that really surprise you?
Now, some of these venues just don't have any people in them.
No, you need a round or two before people put their butts in seats for that kind of thing. What is it? Mississippi, Ole Miss and Oklahoma coming up next, and then you've got the Texas Tech game where we're all very excited to watch Jared Culver.
But we're still talking about Ja Morant and what we saw yesterday, and we'd all seen the highlights. We'd all go, you can go to YouTube and say, oh, wow, he's really athletic.
Ja Morant!
And he's really fast and all that. But when you see them toy with Marquette, and make no mistake, they toyed with Marquette.
Yeah.
Then you can start to understand that that was, and that building's full of scouts. There's no secrets now. Anybody that was trying to sleep him down, a couple of picks or something.
No, come on. Uh-uh. That wasn't happening to begin with. No, he was always two going into this draft. I don't know that, to my mind, there's not enough ability or games left in the tournament for a guy like Cam Reddish or RJ Barrett to make up the distance between either three or four or however you want to rank him, or Rui Hachimura. They're not getting over Ja Morant. I think the gap, to be quite honest with you, I think the gap between one and two, Zion and Ja, is a pretty big one. I think the bigger gap, though, is Ja Morant and the rest of this draft, and the three and the four and the five. That's how staunchly I feel about those two players.
Yeah, it looks like it's happening that way. That's an all-time dunk. That is an all-time dunk from yesterday.
The two-handed over-the-top throwdown.
Yeah, as you're putting your crack on the top of a guy's head.
Aggressive.
I mean, that's, and the fact that he knew it from the moment he makes the pass in, and then he makes the cut.
Yeah.
And it's just a little drop pass.
That little drop pass, too, was thrown with the perfect amount of disdain for Marquette.
So I don't need like this just, ball
he,
anymore.
He wasn't looking. Yeah. I don't care. We're not even playing against anybody. It doesn't matter because Ja's got the backdoor cut, and there's your tomahawk jam.
And you get the whole meet me at the rim thing I mentioned before, that I was not immediately in front of the television when that was occurring. I was unavoidably detained and through a nearby door. I just heard. I was scared because I thought that like a mountain lion was in the house tearing at my children because of the noises that my son was like, oh my God. Oh, I said, what? And he just goes, Ja Morant just ended somebody's career and maybe his life. I'm like, okay, let me see this. Don't rewind it yet. Okay. Show it again.
Does he not come with the worry that's usually attached to 6'3" guards?
They all do.
Do they?
It's like pitching.
Because remind me, I'm
not like the Markelle Fultz worry that there's going to be some sort of
that you can't shoot,
issue, right?
That you've absolutely lost your fastball and can't do it anymore. Because when Derrick Rose was storming through that tournament as a freshman at 6'3", and I remember seeing him at the United Center. I think it was his year after his rookie season. I started working here and walked. I mean, he's a little bit taller than I am, and I'm a good 6'3". Mm-hmm. He's probably a little bit taller than that. And there was, as soon as the playoffs hit, as soon as that first round game or that round against the Heat happened and LeBron was switched on to Derrick, you saw the ceiling and you saw it happen fast.
Yeah, height matters.
But I think with the way Morant plays, if you take his game and put it on the NBA floor, you take his game and put NBA players around him, I think there's an expectation that the turnover issues that he has had and did have against Marquette, to be fair, probably dissipate because you've got better playmakers around him anyway.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey. The first place Chicago Wolves return to Allstate Arena next Saturday as they look to clinch another playoff berth. Celebrate the 25th anniversary season with free parking courtesy of Kia. For information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. 773 says, that dunk by Morant was as close to D-Rose on Dragic as you'll ever get. Yeah. Dragic is a point guard, though.
That's right.
That was a big.
Yep. In transition, so Rose like leaving his, you kind of saw it coming in a different way. This was a little bit more cold.
Some of the best.
That one had more lead in.
Best dunks like on guys, the meet me at the rim moments. We know what they're Scottie Pippen against Patrick Ewing.
That's it.
Well, that had the walkover too. That had everything involved.
It had a little showmanship at the end.
It was special. There was obviously Vince Carter ruining Frederick Weiss forever. And now Frederick Weiss has a...
Still ruined.
He has a convenience store tobacco shop. That's what he does. Doesn't play basketball anymore.
Well, would you?
I don't know.
You saw your life flash in front of your eyes as Vince went up in the air.
I mean, there were... And one of my personal favorites, if you ever get the chance, it's Nikola Vucevic on Pau Gasol. And it's the one where
Paul was on the Bulls?
Yeah. And Pau just kind of falls away. And the best thing was on Pau Gasol's birthday, Dirk Nowitzki tweeted the video of it.
Oh, I remember him doing that. I'm pulling up the dunk. I'm rewatching it.
As a birthday message. But you don't usually see dunks quite like that on somebody in a college game when it's a 6'3 guy against a big. All right, that was pretty good, right?
Oh my God, this dunk is absolutely ferocious.
Which one?
The Vucevic one. Because he gives him two shoulders. He gives him an in and out with the left and then the right.
I know.
And it's just token shoulder work. It's not representative of a fake or a deke or Mark Deeks or anything. He's just his shoulders just happen to go back and forth, and Pau just gives him the lane and then he throws it down.
The moment at which Pau realizes he's going to fall down, he's like, oh, here I go.
There it is. I guess the big tree fall hard. Yep. Here we go.
One of my favorite things is the bench reaction when the DeAndre Jordan ending Brandon Knight's career happens.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah. When there's like a pause where they don't exactly know quite how to deal with
it. Right. And then they're all like at the same point of mid standing up when it happens and everybody loses it.
The top hit on YouTube when you search that is The Death of Brandon Knight. That's the title of the video. It's The Death of Brandon Knight. My word, what a dunk.
The guy's name escapes me right now, but there was an Iowa player who played in the NBA. He was a two-guard, a high-flying two-guard.
So not Adam Haluska.
Correct. I believe his
name was not who we're thinking of.
Not Adam Haluska.
Adam Haluska did not realize that Iowa was not Wisconsin.
Yeah, but who am I thinking of? The microphone, he leapt up for a dunk, and there's some little point guard standing under the basket. And as he leaps up for the dunk and lays back, you clearly hear him yell, oh, bleep. Like just heralding his own dunk.
Yeah.
He's yelling it. It's not the guy underneath. It's not a guy on the bench. It's not Alan Nero in his chair. It is him. Who am I thinking? Why can't I remember the guy's name? Like a genuine, actual athlete, like a player. Yeah. I think he was a first round pick.
No, here's what Bear's mentioning though. It's the Taj Gibson putback on Dwayne Wade.
Ooh, yeah.
With the full extension. I mean, he might have even come from underneath 180 degrees of turnaround. That's a powerful dunk. And I've always been of the opinion, like, you'll see the dunk in real motion, real time, right? And there's something that gets lost. It's like the one place where slow motion replay doesn't quite work, because when you put a dunk in slow-mo, you lose the ferocity of the thing.
The anger.
You lose that. And while it's cool to see, like I always want them to – I hate when basketball broadcasts will just – they'll show the slow-mo replay and then go back to live action. I think you should go dunk, slow-mo, then dunk replay in live action again. I want to be left with the viciousness.
And turn the noise up, too.
I want all of that.
Pop
I want
that way up on the replay.
And then I want to be taken back to live action. Thank you.
And we have to mention Sean Kemp torturing the Warriors, whether it was Alton Lister or that, and doing the double point like he did, or Chris Gatling, who was just kind of like, yeah, that happened.
Yeah, Alton twisted Lister. Had that happen to him on many occasions because he was always standing there. By the way, Ricky Davis. Thank you. That's who it was.
All right.
One of the best triple doubles ever in the NBA. It's like garbage time. They inbound the ball to him at half court. He goes to the opposite basket, throws the ball off the rim so he can get his 10th rebound.
That's right.
Didn't Vincent Askew do that too?
I think so.
I believe. Well, there
was, I want to say Darius Miles had a night like that.
There was controversy because Vincent Askew, like the coach called a timeout or something to get him in there so he can get a triple-double, I want to say. This is Mitchell in Oak Brook on the score. What's up, Mitchell?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I was going to mention the Lister Blister and the one on Chris Gatling because of this showmanship where he's basically telling the camera to pan in on, I think it was Gatling on the ground who just got, you know, posterized with the cuff dunk. But Derrick Rose didn't get to put many big men on posters because he was more of like a two-foot jumper. So he kind of had to like ramp up, I guess you would say.
Right, that's true. Jump. That's a good point. He does go off 2 feet more than not.
But you guys are missing another Chicago product who was an awesome in-game dunker. Shannon Brown had quite a few for the Lakers that were pretty brutal, and he had one where he almost put somebody on a poster from just inside the free throw line. I think it was against Phoenix, and he got fouled on the attempt. But I remember Jeff Van Gundy like going crazy about it as he was attempting it. So I'll hang up and let you.
You got it, man. Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate the call.
Good memory.
It's the Alton Lister one where he's pointing at Lister on the ground and like looking at the cameraman to zoom in. But it's the he cradles the bat like a football. Kemp just takes the thing in and rocks it all the way through two steps down the lane. It's brutal.
Boy, there's an underrated. I'd forgotten about this one. J.R. Smith, when he was on the Nuggets, he jumped from one step inside the free throw line and went over Gary Neal.
That's the one.
Two hands and threw it down.
There's a Tom Chambers dunk like that. It was over Stockton, I think.
Where
two hands and his knees go into Stockton's neck.
Well, speaking of short shorts.
Yeah, no, that's. See if you can find Tom Chambers' two.
I just watched the J.R. Smith one.
Okay.
There's death in that video. there's death in that video.
Brandon Knight. Hey, when we come back.
Mark Jackson, by the way.
It was Mark Jackson?
Oh, was it?
I'm worried the Bulls are about to make a mistake they shouldn't make.
How worried?
I'm pretty worried that they're going to make a personnel mistake.
That's where we're headed next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Here comes Chris Paul. The lob. The jam! Oh, what a monster jam by DeAndre Jordan!
And Rick is right. The reaction of the Clippers bench there when they fell down, they were so overcome. They were verklempt. They were just, two guys fell down and one guy jumped over the other guy. It's like they had the vapors. They didn't know what to do.
Chris Paul throws the alley-oop and then just high steps for about three or four steps after the dunk's done. There's death in that video.
But they stood up as soon as the lob went up in the air. Everybody on the bench is like, oh, man.
It's happening.
And then it delivered, right?
I mean, where DeAndre Jordan's jumping from doesn't make sense as a 7-footer to
no.
be able to dunk from there.
He leaves from just inside the circle, the free throw circle that extends underneath the free throw line. That's a long way to cover.
All right, speaking of athleticism.
It doesn't have a head of steam, by the way. It's two steps and in.
No, I mentioned that I'm worried about the Bulls making a mistake here.
You did say that.
I think Shaq Harrison is really good.
How good?
I think he's a guy you got to have on your roster when you're good. I think he's a guy who, on a good team in a playoff series, does things for you that help you win. He's raw. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot to figure out, but I really like Shaq Harrison. And if you keep him over Denzel Valentine, that is a mistake.
I mean, you want to be younger and more athletic, yes?
If you keep Denzel Valentine over him, I should say.
Yeah, I get it. You want to be younger and more athletic. You like Shaq. I mean, it would be... Unfortunately, there are a history of guys that got away after you've added them on a couple of things. Etwan Moore is one of them. Spencer Dinwiddie is another one of them.
I'm saying this ahead of time. This guy is on a track to be a valuable NBA player. I don't care where you drafted Denzel Valentine.
Gennaro Pargo got away.
I haven't identified anything Valentine does that's really going to help me win. I don't know what he does.
Well, he hadn't played.
He doesn't play very much. He's not a very good athlete. I don't really understand it. I know they like Chandler Hutchison, but I hope that the Bulls understand that whoever their next point guard is, that at some point, I think that what Shaq Harrison does, his effort, especially with what everything Jim Boylan says about toughness and effort and heart and spirit and soul, Shaq Harrison embodies, he's like a classic Boylan effort guy. And he's quick twitch. He's got very quick hands. He anticipates really well defensively. Don't lose him.
Shouldn't this be the year where you're able to hold on to a couple of dudes just on spec? I mean, look at the roster, the way it's constructed. Like, yes, you have a couple of dollars committed to guys like Porter and LaVine and whatnot, but Robin Lopez probably isn't coming back. So you replace another big there. Omer Asik is a ghost, so that contract's off the books after this year, right?
I think so.
I believe it's off the books after this year.
Didn't they waive him already?
Yeah, oh, I just meant the contract itself, like the money that's attached to it. So that allows you to pick up some players and spaces. I would imagine that whatever you're going to do in free agency, if that is going to be your veteran point guard that you want to add on to the roster and compete with Chris Dunn, or depending on what draft pick you get, if you're staring at Ja Morant, I mean, that's... You can find space for Shaq.
Yeah, I think Shaq Harrison is on a developmental track right now. That means you invest in that. That's a buy stock for me.
He's a starter?
Nah, maybe
future starter.
No.
All right, just checking.
No.
Just a heat check here.
There's the offensive part of the game that he hasn't quite figured out yet.
Not even
that.
Close.
I mean, the entirety fact that of your it. Head has to be up when you're playing.
That
offense.
Helps. That helps the whole looking up part.
I never really figured that out.
Yeah, but. If the Bulls actually get some wing depth and he doesn't have to play out of position at the three, then he could be your guard defender off the bench if you really want to do it that way, and it makes Chris Dunn even more expendable.
He's already expendable in my book. I think
regardless of almost anything else.
Yeah, we know it now. We have had enough of a sample size.
Oh, right. I'm just saying, like, even as a backup point guard where his skill set would still be good for you.
The 312 says, thanks, Bernstein. This wasn't even on my radar, and now I'm angry because I know they're going to mess it up. But maybe they won't.
Extra worry.
Maybe they won't. I just, the key to being self-aware is knowing when maybe some undrafted bum off another team's roster ends up better than one of your first round picks. You don't keep your first round pick just because he's your first round pick.
Yeah, sample size is large, though, for especially guys who fit that, you know, guards, you know, developmental type guys. Maybe they don't fit the archetype for size, weight, speed ratio kind of thing. The Bulls have let two of those guys in very recent history get away who've been productive players elsewhere.
If there's one thing we don't have to worry about, it's the Bulls falling in love with a guy that's already on their roster.
Yeah, that's right.
They've never done that before.
No, can't point to that as a symptom.
It looks like we got some numbers that are starting to coalesce around the idea of that Chris Sale extension you're talking about. Like you said yesterday,
that's right.
I don't know where. I don't know if this is just a handful of agents who are coming to some similar agreements, or that a template is in place to structure a lot of these. But it does look like many veteran players, both position players and pitchers, are starting to agree to some deals. And I'm wondering if any Cubs are going to be affected by this.
You would imagine that you'd like to have a couple of Cubs locked into longer-term contracts. It looks like the guys that are getting signed are, well, some the high-ticket guys that are getting signed are in the $30 million marketplace. You know, Chris Sale, Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, those guys are right around that number. I don't think, it doesn't sound to me like Chris Bryant is ready to take an extension, given everything he said this offseason. I don't know that he's ready for the $30 million extension. But if you could find, and if you could agree to, some sort of deal that keeps Javi Baez around for something in the... I'm just kind of spitballing here. He got 7.5 in arbitration this season. 7.5, right? I think it was just under 8. So if you could find something that it is in the 10-12, escalating to the $16 million year and buying out a free agent year somewhere... kind of play that risk to your advantage, the inherent risk of Javi Baez's strikeout rate to your advantage, and get a little bit of a break contract-wise. From a front office perspective, that's where I'd end up. Well, that's where I wonder, are they looking?
A little piece of basketball news as well. It looks like Porter Moser is going to be doing some studio work with CBS for the remainder of the tournament, and we're also looking at him as another year into an off season of jobs opening, and how long Loyola is going to keep their guy, we don't know.
More news on the tournament, too. It's a brand new thing you're going to be able to watch for this tournament exclusively. Let you know what it is when we come back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.